Hey, Michelle.
Hey, Mike.
Nothing like starting a podcast without recording it.
That's okay. We'll figure it out.
I'm on a really crazy schedule today, so we're a little late.
Yeah, I'm glad you found the time to do it. I'm glad we made this work out.
Michelle, you were telling me what you think of Kim's new criminal career.
You know, I worry that she might be too much for Jimmy to handle. I worry that... Of course, that's what I do. I worry. But I worry that she's going to, that Jimmy needs somebody on the straight and narrow to keep him from going off the deep end. And that's not going to be Kim, we see. And I just think it's so cool the way they've shown us this.
Yep. A couple flips of the script here coming to light in this episode.
A couple. Yeah. The whole thing kind of, you know, threw me off kilter. It shows us that nothing is as it seems in this, necessarily.
Michelle, we do a podcast.
We do?
On West Coast Project, and this is the podcast for Better Call Saul.
Yep.
Now I got to scroll. I'm not really ready to do this yet, but 408 Coushatta. What did you think of this? What did you think of Coushatta, Michelle?
Okay.
It's always fun to do the cold open. Hey, what do you think of Huell being D.B. Cooper? But it's we really start doing the podcast after we do that stupid cold open. So what did you really think of Coushatta? Did you like it?
I loved it. I loved it. And I'm going to tell you why. There's two main reasons with sub-reasons in between why I loved, loved, loved this episode. Okay, first of all, Michelle,
if you didn't like it, just say so.
I know I hate doing this. I swear I fangirl, but I do it more and more over this show, and I hate that. I wish I could, you know, I wish I could find stuff to complain about. There was one thing I had a little tiny question over, and everything else just blew it out of the water. Okay, listen. Did you know that the Free Will Baptist Church website is actually a website?
Well, I know after I heard it.
You heard it?
I mean, I heard it on the Insider podcast.
I didn't. So I just like dive into this stuff and try to figure it out. And the pastor's phone number on that website, if you call that number, you'll get Saul impersonating this pastor.
Yeah.
And, Mike, they have a newsletter on that website that I may or may not have signed up for. And I think you should put up a link on West Coast Project so people can really see the detail to which these people go to make this show so freaking authentic. Oh, and if you click donate on that site, it takes you to the food bank of Northwest Louisiana, which is really cool. And now I'm really curious as to the donations that they might have gotten because of that. So, okay, that's number one. This show is incredible for detail, just incredible. And I think that has to be appreciated, particularly for people like me and you who podcast, right? Okay.
Well, you're pretty easily impressed with that. They've kind of made a theme out of that, right? They made the live websites for the Madrigal and a couple other times they've done it. It's been kind of a theme.
Yeah, they've done phone numbers.
It's not that
stuff.
Hard
yeah.
to do. You make a website. And you...
It's not, but I mean, so far they've got like at least three phone numbers that you can call that have different things on it. And I just think that, and no, it's not hard to do. But if you think about just how much detail goes into this stuff, they just don't. I don't know. You know some of the shows that we've watched and some of the shows that we've podcast on, and you can't get a clear answer. You can't pay for one, right? And in this one,
I can hardly get one from you.
That's unsurprising, too. Okay, but anyway, I love that. I love their attention to detail, okay? The second thing that I love is that they threw me off kilter. I did not expect Kim to behave the way she did. I didn't expect Nacho to live the way he did. I thought he was like more down to earth than the house and stuff represented to me. I didn't expect Ziegler to be the one that was going to get in trouble. We've kind of always thought it was going to be Kai. And I think they're just letting us know that even when we think we know what's happening on this show, even though they're working within constraints of Breaking Bad, they still have some tricks up their sleeve. And I love it when TV can surprise me. And it wasn't just one surprise. It was two good surprises. And then the nacho thing kind of threw me off, too. So I just love it when a TV show does that to me.
Yeah, that's why I kind of said before, it's you can almost on safe ground say that this show has a potential to be better than Breaking Bad, because when they made Breaking Bad, they proved that they were really good writers, really creative, and had a great plot, and they fleshed it all out perfectly. But now, man, they've got all these multiple plots. Like, this is a flower opening up to a million different things that they could go in any direction they want. And we know they're good enough to do it. So it's really encouraging that, and I don't think it's a distraction. I think some of the stuff was kind of dopey, and I have some questions about stuff. But I think it's really encouraging that, like, this could go on forever, you know?
Almost. I mean, almost it could. If they wanted to continue it with Gene, it certainly could. I mean, we got to come to some Breaking Bad moment.
Like, who would have thought at the beginning of Better Call Saul, or even beginning of this season, that the biggest question is what is going to happen to Kim?
Oh, I know.
It's like, when's Saul going to be Saul? When's Gus going to come? When are we going to see Walt and Jesse? You know, I don't even really care about Walt and Jesse. I'm really thinking about Kim more than any other plot.
I agree. And I got to tell you, when they first came out with Saul, I was, you know, obviously going to watch it because I was a Breaking Bad fan, but I wasn't super excited about it. And I know you started the podcast. You did the podcast for the first 2.5 years with Jamie. And I mean, I listened and I loved your podcast and I watched the show and all that. But they've come so far. And they have really sucked me into these characters. We have to remember, this is 4 years of these characters at this point. And, yeah, we do care about them. They have made me care about them.
So can Kim be alive somewhere in the twilight, in the background of Breaking Bad?
Okay,
could
you know,
can she be the girlfriend that Jimmy never told anybody about, that he kept secreted away somewhere? Girlfriend or wife or whatever.
Yeah, I tried to remember, and I even tried to look it up this week because I did have a couple extra hours. Jimmy, I'm pretty sure, I mean, not Jimmy, Saul was married. Saul had an ex-wife.
Yeah, he said that. That's a toss-away, I think.
I think so.
I caught my stepfather sleeping with my second ex-wife. I think that's a toss-away. He did that to get... He was trying to encourage Walt when Walt and Skyler are having trouble.
Yeah.
He would say anything, Michelle, to get what he wanted out of Walt at that point. I don't think that's canon that we have to say that actually happened. That's a factual thing because Saul said it. He had a wife. I don't think we take that literally.
I don't think they have to do it, but I think they can do it. And I think that could be where this goes. I think it could go there. This whole time that we've seen Kimmy withdraw, this whole time that we've been going, oh, she hates this man, she hates this, this is terrible, this slow, I think I referred to it as like pulling a Band-Aid off slowly last week or something. It's like, geez, this is painful, painful. She wasn't withdrawing at all. She was contemplating how she felt about turning back into Giselle.
Yeah, I don't think she can live in the twilight. I don't think so. I'm going to find that a stretch if they try to sell it. At this point, I mean, they're creating such a good story. Maybe they can create it for me. But at this point, I say she has to go away or die. I don't think she lives in the twilight as Saul Goodman's partner, female partner.
Well, I don't think she does. I mean, obviously through Breaking Bad, but my guess is this.
Well,
now,
that's what I'm talking about, Breaking Bad. Where is Kim in Breaking Bad?
Well, she's done by then. We know that.
Well, that's what I'm at. That's my whole point. That's the point of this discussion. Is she in the twilight somewhere with Saul, hidden away from Walt and Francesca and everybody? Is she in the twilight somewhere just because Saul wouldn't tell anybody about his most precious thing? Or is she out? Is she dead, or is she moved away, or something else?
I don't think she's in the twilight anywhere, because I don't think Saul would have left her and went away.
No, he just doesn't tell anyone about her.
Yeah, but then they just don't show it to us, and they show us Jean at home, you know, later. No, I don't think that. I think something comes of this now. I think something really comes of this between. I think they said the word wife tonight for a reason.
Mrs. Gwynn does that.
Yes, and I think that was for a reason. And I think she's going to become, this is just a guess, but I think she's going to become his wife. But I think Kim's going to break bad.
I think that was just Mrs. Gwynn being like a traditional Chinese family. Where's your wife?
I know.
Every man above 25 has a wife.
Okay.
Every adult man with an adult woman, they're married. I don't think there's much to attach to that.
And I'm not going to begrudge them if they don't, but I just think it could definitely go in that direction now. Don't tell me you weren't shocked when Kim tossed him against the wall and laid one on him.
I was shocked when Mrs. Gwynn was nice to Jimmy.
Yeah, well, yeah, that too. She felt bad for him. But talking about Kim, you were shocked at that, right?
Yeah, I don't expect Kim to fall into this plot-loving, scam-loving, shady lawyer.
So, how well did they do that? How believable did they do that?
Michelle, did you just whirl on one foot and point a finger at the monitor?
Cut.
Like you're...
Well,
of course they did it well. What are you trying to say? You're just being rhetorical.
No, you're saying, I don't know how they could do that and make it good. And I'm telling you, they already did it and made it good. Now, whether they can continue it and make it good, I don't know.
All right, Michelle, what do you think of Jimmy's bus tour? We should have known Cushato was connected to Huell Babineau, right, with the Cajun Creole name and the Louisiana town.
Yeah.
And Huell being a part of the plot.
Yeah, we probably should have gotten that. I was thinking that was where they were going to take the German workers, and maybe they should have taken the German workers there.
To Louisiana from New Mexico?
I really thought they were going to do like a you know...
Road trip.
Yes, a road trip. But, okay, so how... In depth, how much detail, which was another thing, did they go to pull off this hijinks to free Huell?
Too much depth. Well, too much for me to understand it and appreciate it at this point.
Because
Huell's not that important of a person in the plot, in the whole scheme of things. In either Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul, I don't understand his importance to this whole thing. I guess I see it's Kim's pivot point of turning Breaking Bad from straight lawyer to crooked one. Like, this was so fun to get this guy off and the scam and all this, and it worked. And wow, it worked just the way you said, Jimmy, and this is so much fun. It opened her eyes to this, I guess. But why are they so freaking concerned with getting Huell out of his dilemma?
I honestly, that was actually my question on this. I mean, I don't understand why Jimmy would go to that length unless it's just friendship's loyalty. I don't know. I mean, I can't really, you know.
Yeah, but he tells Jesse Pinkman, if your friend's caught and you don't want him to talk, just kill him. He's not a friendship loyalty type guy when he's
Well, he
Saul.
Is here. Yeah. No, he's not as Saul. And, you know, but Huell doesn't have anything on him, but that they've made us aware of. And he doesn't have anything on Huell.
So it's a plot device for Kim to pivot upon.
Well, I don't think it even matters. I think they've shown us that subtly over the last 3.5 years. It doesn't matter who. Kim just likes the shenanigans. Kim likes the hijinks of it. She likes to trick people. Kim likes to win. And she likes to win against all odds. And it's like this, I don't know if it's an aphrodisiac for her, but it's certainly a high in some way for her to do that. So
they could do that. They could show us that without this Huel being so important that we get him out of this mess to go travel across country. Yeah, and to hire people
14 hours by car.
To have 42 cell phones ready to take calls coming in.
Yeah, well, yeah, Jimmy was going to win. Jimmy was going to win this. And that's what he did. You know, he takes a bus ride, which is like, I think it was like a 14-hour car ride. Be what, a 20-hour bus ride. And the whole time he's drinking energy shots and writing in crayon with his left hand and changing fingers with his right hand and paying people on the bus to write letters and write postcards.
That was the best part, enlisting help from his bus mates.
I was a little surprised about that. I even asked Mike, I said, do you think one of them could come back and say something about it? Because Jimmy kind of points out that it is mail fraud.
Yeah, I know. This is a toss-away plot, though. This is a device to show us that Kim is pivoting into some bad lawyer mode. I don't think Huel's important. I think it's just a device. I think it's inserted in here to show us that Kim gets off on the scam.
Yeah, and maybe to show us that, too, I completely agree, but maybe to show us, too, that at this time, Jimmy is really a good friend to have, even if he doesn't stay that way, that he's a loyal friend.
Maybe. So, although some of this we already knew. We knew she got off on the scam when she was Giselle, the South African sister, doing the scam on the Ken, the guy with the Ken Williams guy. Kind of knew this. So why the replay with Huel?
Yeah, but there's been other times that Jimmy's tried to bring it up and she shot him down since then. So
it's just not very uniform. It's just unclear. It's unclear to me.
I don't care, though. I don't care how they're showing us. I don't care with what means they're showing us. I think that they're showing us. And I'm glad they're showing us with Huel because we like Huel. We know Huel. We know Huel from Breaking Bad. So we like him. We want this to work out for him, I think, for the most part. People do. And the prosecutor was trying to shaft Huel, right? I mean, Kim pointed it out, and Kim didn't like that anyway. So, I don't know. I completely bought all that. So,
well, there's a measure of fair play, I guess, that the prosecutor gaining points and using Huel as a tool, as a step ladder to forward her own career.
Well, right, because he assaulted the police officer with a bag of sandwiches. And she was not going to let it go. And Kim even points out later on, she says that that the prosecutor was heavy-handed. And that's why it went so well. And, of course, Jimmy's telling her no, that it's all her. But anyway, Jimmy gets this whole big bag full of letters, postcards, correspondence, and he drops them off at a post office in Louisiana. And then he just walks right back out. That was it. So this is like a serious what? It has to be like a 2-day trip almost. So, Mike, have you ever been like on a bus and somebody want to come up and sit beside you when there's plenty of other spaces?
Yeah, that was stupid. Why'd that guy do that?
I don't know. There was a lot of other spaces, and he was a big guy. And, you know, Jimmy's not a little tiny person, so Jimmy had something in the seat. I don't know.
It was funny. I mean, it teed up a pretty good joke by Jimmy, but what's the point? It didn't make sense that that guy would pick a spot with a guy of clearly using the other seat for... He's not just has his bag sitting there. He's kind of working and using it almost like a desk. Why would you make that? Why would you interrupt that little process?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, there were a couple nitpicky things about this episode that seemed kind of stupid. That was one for me.
So then we go to the intro and we come back and Nacho's playing with a poker chip, and now he's sitting in Hector's spot. I brought that up last time, which was really telling to me. He is watching one of the guys saying that he's light, and because he couldn't sell in front of like rental security at some little fair thing that they had. And Nacho calls him over to the table. The guy doesn't want to come, but he pulls his earring out of his ear. And there's like blood everywhere. Now, Domingo is the one that's taken over Nacho's job.
Yeah, that's Crazy Eight.
Crazy Eight, I know. And we all remember who he is, right? The one that Walt, spoiler alert, bicycle locked to death in his basement. But Domingo, at this point, he's Domingo. And he is not that mean of a guy. It's kind of like Nacho, right? Nacho wasn't that mean. He had Hector sitting behind him. And Hector had to make him be mean. He had to, like, ruffle Nacho's feathers. And now Nacho is doing it to Domingo, which we see will turn, you know, I don't know if that specifically, but that he's going to turn into Crazy Eight.
No, he doesn't turn him bad, but the whole process of being criminal turns him. He's the nice, sweet kid working at the Tampico Crib Company, the furniture company that made the crib that Walter Jr. used as a baby. Crazy Eight tells Walt that story when right before he gets bike locked in the basement. Tells him the story of how he works in his father's Tampico furniture company.
Yeah, maybe, but he is not a nice, sweet guy at that point. You have to remember what he did. I actually went back and watched the scene.
Well, not in Breaking Bad. He's in the process. Right. What you just said is entirely true. That the process of this whole criminal lifestyle turns them
bad. Right. And Nacho is now doing it to somebody else, which I don't think he likes about himself either. I'm probably, you know, projecting how I would feel in the situation. But that was kind of, I don't know, blood chilling a little bit.
It does a very evil thing that people do in scenes like this, Michelle, where he tears the earring out and then he hands him the napkins, like, there you go, that'll help you, that'll feel better. Like, wait a minute, you just freaking tore my earring out, now you're trying, now you want me to feel. It's like, it just makes it more evil.
I completely agree. Yeah, it's like
it's happened in other movies. I can't even remember which, but like, guy will break a guy's fingers, then give him some ice. Like, here, there you go. They'll put some ice on that now. Like, wait a minute, you just broke the fingers. Why are you trying to make me feel better?
Yeah, it's very kind of No Country for Old Men. Just like, it doesn't mean anything to the person doing it at all. Anyway, I agree. But then we see Nacho walk into his house, and we've never seen Nacho's house. We've seen his dad's house. And I was kind of shocked at Nacho's house. I don't know why.
I think we're seeing progress in the cartel's management. Like, I think we're seeing Nacho moving up a notch. Pardon the pun. But because, you know, Hector's kind of out now and Tuco's in jail or Tuco's somewhere. We don't know where. Maybe we do. I can't remember where. But I think Nacho's moved up a level from Crazy Eight level to one step up higher now. And now he's in the Hector chair. And
right.
Crazy Eight probably moved up a little bit to be in Nacho's chair.
Right.
So,
okay, that's a good point. So you think Nacho's house might be new?
Yeah.
Okay, because we see he takes off his shirt and you can see his bullet wound and how it's healed. So we know some time has passed for it to heal. If we didn't know anything else, if we didn't know about the time passing, and we do because of Jimmy getting reinstated or about to get reinstated, we would know because of that. So
we also see the fear. We see the fear in business that lower levels of employees deem upon their managers. It happens with Crazy Eight to Nacho, and then it happens with the girls to Nacho when they're lounging around, and then he comes home and they're like, oh, the boss is here. They kind of straighten up and sit up straight, and it's like, we better keep our shit together because the boss is here now.
Oh, I know.
It shows like a hierarchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they kind of straighten up. They offer to cook him dinner. And I don't know if you noticed or not, he didn't say a single word in that scene. He threw them what I'm assuming is meth. The girl was sitting there playing with some kind of bong before he came in. He threw them drugs, and then he walked into his bedroom and locked the door. And then he went to the safe to put up the stuff, and his ID cards fell out. He has Manitoba ID cards for him and his father, fake IDs.
Yeah, his plans to escape.
Yeah,
it's pretty, kind of cool that it's Manitoba. Michael Mando's from Canada, so I don't know if he's from Manitoba, but that's kind of cool that that's their plan.
Okay, I didn't realize that, but yeah, that's it's cool. But you can see how stressed he is now. Do you think this is his plan, or do you think this is his in case of emergency?
No,
escape?
I think that's his plan. Save. He's skimming some money out of this, and he stashes some of that in the safe. I think every little day he's taking a little bit of more money. He's like getting a little bit more. You know, he's like getting a little, maybe a little bit more distance between him and Hector and the cartel, and he's like pretending to be like a company man. But yeah, it's clearly his plan. I don't think it's a save everything here in the safe place and in case I have to bail. I think he's planning to bail.
Well, he almost has to with Gus now too on him, right?
And by the way, Michelle, I had to stop motion the video because I swore that was Gene. His dad's fake ID looked like Gene.
It was
like, why does Nacho have Gene's ID? And how could he know Gene? And how, you know, Gene's not even Gene yet. What the hell? And I tried to read it, and then I figured out it was his dad.
So we don't know Nacho from Breaking Bad. So is Nacho going to...
Except for that one scene, and then we get this guy at the end that kind of explains more about that, too. Lalo?
Yes, yes. Where they talk about him, you mean, that scene?
Yeah, where in Breaking Bad 208, called Better Call Saul, when they take Saul out to the desert, Saul says some stuff about Nacho. And it involves Lalo.
Oh, okay. I remember the Lalo. I don't remember Nacho, him talking about that. So, but they are going to intersect at some point. That's what this is telling us.
Yeah, I think that's the... That's what we learned from this episode.
Right, right. Okay, so then the Germans are at the strip club, and Mike and Ziegler are bored. They don't want to be in there, and so they leave. But they leave somebody there guarding the younger guys. And they're in the bar, Mike and the Ziegler guy are, and they have this really interesting conversation where Ziegler's saying that his dad was also an engineer and he built the Sydney Opera House. And he's talking about how it took him 6 years to figure out the concrete opera arches and then many more years to actually execute his plan. And he said he donated 10 years of his life or devoted 10 years of his life to that project. And then he asks about Mike's dad. And Mike just blows him off. He says his dad, you know, left him nothing but bills. That was... Mike is not going to talk. Mike doesn't talk. He doesn't tell anybody anything about himself. The only thing we've learned from Mike is when we see, like, the flashback of Maddie or something. He's not going to... He's certainly not an open book like Ziegler is. Anyway, this guy comes
an open book. He's a freaking braggart. He's doing exactly what Mike was afraid of. That
no, I said Mike is not an open book. Mike's not.
Yeah, and I'm saying, but you're kind of implying that Werner is an open book. Like I talk about things. He's doing more than being an open book. I'm saying he's a clear and open braggart, talking about, oh, I'm involved with the Sydney Opera House getting built, and you know that he's trouble now because he's gonna do exactly what they were afraid of, spill the beans about pouring concrete in a giant hole in the New Mexico desert to people at a bar.
Well, I think that they told us about Ziegler's wife. They gave her a name, Marguerite, and that they've been together for 26 years and how she is his heart and all that. And I think that they did that for a reason. I didn't necessarily see him as bragging about his father, but
he's bragging about everything. How they built the Sydney Opera House and how they built.
Well, he didn't. He didn't do it. It was his father.
Werner bragged about it to the people. He was bragging about it to Mike. Now
with the guy there,
he's a braggart. Right. My point is, he's a braggart. He's bragging about it to Mike, and then later on, we're going to see how Mike caught him bragging about the construction later on.
Yeah.
That's the point, Michelle. This is the whole point, I think, with this is Mike being, I'll give you a warning and don't do it again or you're going to be in big trouble. And Gus looking at Mike going, that's a little light punishment. I think this is Mike's learning not to be happy with a half measure.
Yeah, I even put that down in here too. But still, I didn't look at it as like him bragging. I looked at it as like that was his father's defining moment. And now what Ziegler was doing in the super lab was his defining moment.
Well, that's bragging.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, not, I don't know. I just took it as him expressing that that was his, that this was his.
That's the very definition of bragging, talking about how you've accomplished things that you don't need. I guess he's proud of it. And I mean, maybe you can say it in a nicer way than bragging, but it's trouble. You can't talk about this kind of stuff.
Well,
the Sydney Opera
not.
House was innocent, but the point is that he's capable of talking and bragging about things that he's accomplished, including one that's very criminal that they don't want anyone to know about. So,
well, obviously, and I even made a note of that when that happened. But the guard guy comes to get Mike and tells him that he needs to go check on the boys, and Mike leaves Ziegler. I didn't think anything about him leaving Ziegler there. Kia was touching some woman, and Mike's having to pay off the bouncer to keep the bouncer from calling the cops. And Mike turned to Kia and
Kai,
and says, "You are done." And then he looks at him. He's like, "Go ahead, try me." And Kai learns, right? He shuts up. And then Mike goes above and beyond and gives the bouncer money for the girl. For the girl's trouble that Kai was trying to mess with. So Mike smooths everything over with that.
Well, Mike
because,
knew,
I mean,
Mike knew that bouncer, too.
Oh, you think he knew him?
I think so.
No, he didn't. The bouncer asked him. The bouncer said, "And who are you?" You know, because he was going to call the cops.
Yeah, but Mike set this up. I think Mike knew it maybe for a day or two, but Mike set this up to take these guys there. They didn't just drive around until they found a strip bar and say, "Oh, there's a good spot. Let's stop here." I think Mike set it all up. I think that guy knew Mike from a meeting prior to this interaction with the problem of the touching the stripper.
I guess that's possible, but Mike smoothed it over either way. And then he goes back, and this is where Ziegler is drawing the building on a coaster, drawing the super lab with the guy that he bought the beer for.
He's bragging, man. Got to admit it, Michelle, without throwing shade on my theory. I'm gonna throw shade on myself here, though, because somewhere along the way in this scene, some doofus comes up and orders a heefy weezin.
That was the guy. That was the same
and
guy.
And it's a Hefeweizen. It's a wheat beer. But I got to say this, Michelle. My friend Mary, who is our super critic, who kind of makes fun of me tweeting that, you know, Walt dies in Breaking Bad.
Right.
She said she was ripping me for the way I could not pronounce the next episode.
Oh, no.
Wiedersehen. It's Wieders. Now I'm going to not be able to say it now that I say this. It's auf Wiedersehen. When you say till we meet again, auf Wiedersehen. Auf Wiedersehen. That's what it is.
Well, how did she know? Well, you haven't said that yet.
She travels and she knows a lot of languages. She's smart. But she was mad that I couldn't figure out what that word was.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It means goodbye or until we meet later.
You help me with that last week, Michelle?
Well, we didn't go over it last week.
Yeah, we struggled with the word. I struggled with the word for about...
Oh, yeah. You're right. Well, because the off wasn't in front of it, so it threw me off.
I know, me too.
Truly, because when we did Girl Scouts with the girls years ago, they had to learn, like, hello and goodbye and nice to meet you in, like, several different languages to earn a badge, and that was one of them. So I actually didn't know
thanks
that.
A lot after the fact. I do endure the ripping of my friend.
Well... Okay, but, you know, that's okay. Oh, my gosh.
It's okay for
imagine.
You.
No, if she rips your pronunciation of stuff, I don't even want to hear what she says about me because I am the world's worst. But,
the point is I didn't even know the word. I wasn't like, oh, auf Wiedersehen. How do you say that? Auf Wiedersehen? Like, I didn't even recognize the word.
How would you, though? I mean,
it's
unless
not a big
German.
Deal. I'm just saying. So this guy orders a hefeweizen.
That was funny.
That was funny that he did it right after I did it a week later.
And then, yeah, Ziegler, this was before, but this is where he corrects his pronunciation of it and buys him the beer. And
his pronunciation? His pronunciation?
What?
I think what if you want to say pronunciation, I think you're doing some sort of criminal act on words by mispronouncing the word that means
pronunciation.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not how we say it here, but okay, I'll do that. I swear we say pronunciation, and I know that's not right, but that's anyway. Or that's, you know, anyway.
All I know is I didn't get a beer out of this after getting corrected.
Well, true. That's true. Okay, so Ziegler wants Mike to come sit down. He's like really into his story, and he's excited to have somebody different to talk to that wants to have this conversation about building with him. And Mike makes some kind of code, you know, your wife called or something that's obviously code that Ziegler knows he needs to get up. So he gets up, and you can tell Mike's unhappy. And he's driving the Chrysler. Did you notice?
Yeah. I made a note here, too, before we get on past this whole Sydney Opera House things. Werner was proud of his father. And there's a lot about lineage and heritage and fathers. And we have not Tuco, Nacho and his father. Mm-hmm. We have Gus somewhere in the past saying family is everything to Walt. I think he's telling Walt that. We have Hector. Gus says that, but maybe Hector does that too when he holds the cousins under the water. He's like, you were going to tell on your brother, holding his head under the water.
Yeah, I don't remember
it. He's like, family is everything. There's an implication here about family that's really powerful.
Well, obviously the Salamancas and, you know, I mean, and yeah, we even see that when they bring in other, you know, people and how they are about Tuco, who's in jail.
Well, and how they were about Tuco when he got taken out, spoiler alert, that they had to go get the guy that took him out. And was that Hank or was that Walt or whatever? You know, the cousins weren't going to stop until they avenged their family.
Right.
And then the final one, the most important one, Michelle, is the salute again, where they take out Don Eladio, and they take the amulet from around his neck, and they show it to Hector. Gus shows it to Hector, and he's like, your lineage is now finished. Your lineage is over. We've killed your cousins and your nephews and your whatevers. It's like lineage is somehow super important in this thing. I don't know. I kind of got that from this Sydney Opera House thing, too.
Well, I think that's really good. Also, I agree with that. And also the fact that with Ziegler, I mean, I call him by his last name. I know everybody else calls him Werner. But, he was proud of his father and what his father has done. And he was trying to get Mike to say something nice that his father had done. And, of course, Mike doesn't. But we know that Mike, as a father to Maddie, was a real important part of, you know, the story.
Right.
Okay, then the funniest part of the whole thing, Huell's face on file while Kim is listening to this music. Okay, Jimmy comes in and she is really hard to interrupt, and he tells her he's going to the nail salon to finish setting things up. We still don't know what's going on. And she blows him off. Good idea. See you later. You know, I'm going to lick some crackers off the counter later in place of having you bring
anything. Farther and farther apart. They look like they're at the farthest point apart that we've ever seen them. That the next scene is going to be Kim. Jimmy comes home and there's a note on the door. Kim says, "Hey, I decided I'm out. See you forever." Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and he starts to leave, and he thinks, and he comes back, and he offers her food, and that's where she's like, "No, I'd rather lick crackers crumbs off the, you know, off the stool than." Then you bring me dinner. And he starts to leave again, and he pauses, and he looks at her, and it's like this longing, and then he leaves. And then we see him at the nail salon, and Mrs. Nugent?
Gwen.
It's not just Gwen.
Yeah, it's Gwen, sure? Man. It's Gwen.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, I have no right to rip you after off Wiedersehen, but Weeder. But yeah, it's Mrs. Gwynn.
Okay, if
starting
you're sure
with an it's N, Gwynn, Nguyen. No, it's Gwynn.
The, yeah. Okay, Gwynn. I'm gonna have to write that down somewhere because I'm not gonna get that right. Anyway, she comes in and
why is she
says,
nice to Jimmy? She's like giving him advice, nice to him. She's like the mother hen. I like Mrs. Gwynn now. She's kind of an old, cold, cranky old coot before, but I like her now.
Yeah, I don't think she necessarily. I mean, yeah, obviously she's
don't
like,
drink the water. That's for customers. That's not being nice.
She's bossy. She's bossy too.
Now she's bringing them water.
Yeah, well, it wasn't water, and she's motherly, kind of.
Well, she's kind of hot too. She's not exactly motherly to Jimmy. She's pure.
She behaves motherly to him. Not that she's old enough to be his mother, but she's like, "Don't you drink the water? That's for the customers. Get out." Kind of like a mother would tell kids, you know, we got some drink set up for company or something, and the kids are in there, you know, spitting in them or whatever kids do, and you know, the mother's like, "Get out of here! Don't do that. That's for other people." She's just motherly to him. She's like, you know, wipe your feet, close the door. She's motherly, and so she sees him sitting in there, and she sees him side sacking. So this is where she asks if his wife's mad at him. And then he starts to say it's not his wife. And then he just kind of blows that off and he goes, I don't know. But she goes into this thing and she's like trying to help him, right? She pours him. I thought it was vodka. Mike said it might be sake even or something. I don't know.
I thought it was that cucumber water that she's coveting.
Definitely was not cucumber water.
All right.
Definitely not. Jimmy's making a face at it. And cucumber water's lovely.
Well, unless it's old cucumber water.
You think she's giving him like the...
She gives him the advice, though, Michelle, that other girls have given me to say to girls. Tell her you're sorry, and then when you're done with that, tell her you're sorry again. And as a dude, when I hear that, I'm like, wait a minute, why? That doesn't even apply. There was no apology even. It just doesn't matter. Tell her you're sorry. Why is that so important to women?
Well, first of all, I don't know that it is important to women. I think...
Well, clearly is. She's telling him that's the solution to Kim.
No. She's telling him, don't be a jerk, is what she's telling him. And she's telling him, when you are a jerk, then kind of take your medicine and get past it with this woman. That's what she's telling him. Take her to a restaurant that has cloth napkins.
She literally says, Michelle, tell her you're sorry, and then tell her you're sorry again. She says that to tell her that he's sorry. That's the whole point. That
can you not see beyond that, though?
I know, but I get it. It's like, I'm not right. You have a point. You're right. Saying you're sorry kind of illustrates that or illuminates that.
Well, it doesn't matter what you've done. If you want the relationship and she's that mad at you and you've screwed it up, try to fix it.
Can you tell I'm single, Michelle?
Well, I think you're a good guy, Mike. And Mike's number is... Can we give your
number?
By
the way, they had a phone number that started with a 1 in this episode, which is pretty hokey.
Did you call it?
505-143. It was the...
It was Suzanne Erickson's, prosecutor's number. Yeah, did you call it?
No, I didn't call it.
I was sappy enough to call it.
Did it work?
No, it didn't.
Oh, man. This show does not put any attention into any details, man.
I know. Why won't they do that? I mean, we don't ask for much, right? But Jimmy's sitting there, and he's turning up the vodka. Jimmy says it's too late. He thinks it's too late. And that was pretty sad. I think
Mrs. Gwynn might be the new, what's her name to me? Lydia. I might have moved the hotness from Lydia onto the Mrs. Gwynn. Anyway, back to the story.
So Kim comes in to see Suzanne, the Huel prosecutor. And, man, she is walking down that hallway with her three protégés in tow. And Kim wants 6 months probation and time served. And Suzanne is having nothing with that. She is not budging on this. She wants him to do 18 months. So the other attorneys there, they start talking about filing motions for everything from security cameras to personal records for the officer. And they even start in on the conversation about maybe they'll involve the ACLU. They think Huel's civil rights may have been violated. And Suzanne, the Huel prosecutor, calls their bluff and says, all right, we'll deal with all this, and then we'll set a trial date. But now she kind of dismisses the others, and she asks him to talk to her in private. And she asks her what she's doing, throwing these $400 an hour associates at a pro bono case. And Kim says, what makes you think this is pro bono? So that was weird. What was that?
Yeah, we already went through all this. We don't know why they're making Huel so important to get off, and it's a pivot point for Kim maybe turning bad. So, you know, who knows why? I'm sure they'll tell us why. We don't need to hash it out again. But that it's
no. But I think we've kind of seen, right, that Kim sits in there and she pulls for these people who are just being railroaded. And I think that's what she really feels like Suzanne's doing here. Kim's like, we'll see. And she leaves, but you can tell she's kind of shaken.
But none of that matters at this point. Kim's in the throes of this plot with Jimmy now. This is a tee up of, what's her name? What's the prosecutor's name?
Suzanne.
This is a tee up of Suzanne. Oh, you may not understand why we have this power behind our legal team, but you don't have to understand, because that's what she's teeing her up to think because of what happens in the next couple scenes with all the letters and the judge not wanting it to be a big deal and all the bad rap.
She is teeing her up, obviously.
She's not worried about getting Huel off at this point. This is teeing her up as part of the scam that she's into.
I think Kim's worried about what she's doing. I think that she's very nervous over what she's doing.
Well, that's probably true. She's not sure it's going to work yet.
Right.
That's why she's so turned on when it does work.
Right. Okay, so then Mike goes into the German house warehouse place picking up the guys for work. And this is where he has that conversation with Ziegler about what he told those guys. And Mike has picked up the coaster and even showed him what he has written. And even as this guy was saying this to them back in that scene, I was just putting exclamation points down as I was taking notes. I couldn't believe he was having this conversation. I couldn't believe it even. And I'm, naive as everything.
Versus taking him out and shooting him?
And I couldn't believe he was showing them. I couldn't believe that Ziegler was showing these guys this stuff. And then Mike picked up the coaster and he brings it to Ziegler and he's like,
Right. Dude. It's a solid piece of evidence that Mike finds a very serious problem and only employs a half measure to resolve it.
Yeah, Ziegler's trying to poo-poo it away. He said they've forgotten already. And Mike says they've forgotten the German National in Albuquerque pouring tons of concrete into a private location. And so Ziegler gets it. He says he understands and nothing like this will ever happen again. And I did put down here, is this a half measure? Is this
clearly because, is, yeah.
Yeah, well, and yeah, and see, when we meet Mike in Breaking Bad, that's his saying, no half measures. And
that's his advice to Walt.
Right. And we know that he's come across that from life experience, we assume. And I'm wondering what kind of life experience we're gonna see.
Yeah, Werner's going to do something else that had Mike given him more than just a warning, I think, is going to prove. I don't know. I they're putting a lot of importance on things that seem trivial. But and we can't cut these guys short because they always have a good plan of what to do, and they always set a great pavement towards the road towards whatever that plot is. So I'm not going to criticize it. You'd be a fool to.
Well, right, because they obviously have a plan, but like the title of the next one, like we were saying, is the Auf Wiedersehen, and
I think it's Auf Wiedersehen. Just kidding. If you don't look at it, it's easy. Auf Wiedersehen.
Okay.
And I think it's Auf Wiedersehen, right? Auf Wiedersehen. They just say it so smoothly that you don't notice.
Okay. I'm not going to be able to say goodbye. It now. It's like if you say crayon too many times, it doesn't make any
wasn't
sense.
Wasn't that a song in the Sound of Music?
Or in Fargo? Remember when they did all those songs in Fargo? I don't know. But anyway, that was the last thing that Ziegler said to those guys when he left. Okay. When he left the table.
Off Wiedersehen, yeah.
Yes. And then that's the title of the next episode. So I think we might see something go on with Ziegler next time. That's my prediction.
Probably see something happen to him.
Yeah, something not good. Okay. Anyway, then Susan, the Huell prosecutor, is called into the judge's office with Kim. And the judge asks if they're prosecuting Santa Claus because he's gotten all these letters. It's just like ridiculous, the amount of letters and stuff that he's got. He doesn't want it to be a circus. And now, Suzanne is taking this personally. She wants to figure out why Huell has people this overheated, and she calls him a common pickpocket. And so they start reading some of the letters, the phone numbers, Elmer Fontenot, and they call him because he's put the phone number in, and of course, he doesn't answer, and they call, and then they call the pastor, and they look up the Free Will Baptist Church, because they call, and they get the girl, the makeup girl from the Saul Productions. He's got them in there, and then we see it kind of all fall together. It's the makeup girl from the commercial crew. She's been taking improv classes, Mike.
Those three, the J.J. Abrams team from New Mexico State or whatever they are, they're credited as actually makeup girl, camera guy, and sound guy. Are they don't have names. That's their name. That's their credit in the show.
Really? That's pretty cool.
So, yeah, makeup girl. It turns out to be a pretty good little actress.
And they have this whole website built of Huell raking leaves and painting and smiling. I mean, they have went to so much effort to make this. I mean, but they'd have to, I suppose, to kind of pull something like this. But Suzanne talks to the preacher, who is Jimmy. And Jimmy starts saying how he's a hero because, and he's great the way he talks. I mean, he's not... It's not very authentic, living closer to Louisiana, maybe, than, well, certainly than he does in California, wherever he is. But it's not completely authentic, but some of it was really authentic. And he says that Huell went in and single-handedly saved a bunch of old people from a coffee pot short fire on Bible study night.
And it's good enough for Suzanne. She buys it, hook, line, and sinker.
Well, yeah, and as she's doing it, and she's got the website pulled up, the donations are racking up, and the preacher says, oh, by the way, she's like getting off the phone, and he keeps her on the phone and says, by the way, when is the trial? Because we're renting charter buses, and we're going to be there. And, of course, that was not what the judge wanted, and she looks defeated in this. And so there's no more phones going off in the war room, is what I called it. The room with Saul and the commercial crew. It's totally silent. The makeup girl asks if it's over. Jimmy is, he tells them to stay there and answer the phones if they ring, but we're going to assume they don't. So Jimmy goes to court and Kim is talking with Suzanne. And he's looking through the little glass at her, and then he goes and sits down, and Kim comes out, and they walk into the stairwell, and she throws him against the wall and passionately kisses him. I was not expecting that.
Yeah, she's really turned on by this whole thing, this whole scam. It's essentially a illegal, fraudulent scam. Tricking a judge with mail that's not really actual mail from certain people that aren't really people is pretty fraudulent, but Kim likes it.
Kim, does she? She just likes winning. I think she really likes that, and I think that's why. I think she likes winning for the underdog and for the little people.
She likes the scam, Michelle. She doesn't like just winning. She likes the fact that they pulled one over on these people.
I think she does. Yeah, she does. So then they're pillow talking, and Jimmy's talking in his Louisiana preacher voice. And this is where Kim's telling him that the phones were genius. And he says the phones were just a touch, but it was all her. And we find out that Huell got 4 months probation and time served, even less than Kim was asking for. And they talk about what they're going to do. It's morning time, and Jimmy says he's going to check out an office by the courthouse today, and Kim has to get up and get ready. So she gets up and gets ready and leaves. And then we see her in her office, and she's preoccupied as Paige is talking. And Kevin brings up the building in... I'm going to let you say it.
Who cares? What, the city?
In Tucumcari. I'm not saying that right.
Tucumcari. I don't even know what it is by that.
It's the building that he wants to...
Temecula?
That's not what I wrote, but I don't know. Anyway.
How do you spell it?
I spelled it Tucumcari, but sometimes I spell things phonically so I can read them. So I don't know. I don't know if I did that here or not.
I can't even remember from the way that you're saying it. Whatever, he wants a building to be the same as the one in the other place, but has a totally different foot. But they can't do it, is the point.
Well, I think they could do it. I think they could have probably easily done it. Kim likes that kind of stuff. Kim likes to make things happen that everybody says isn't going to work. But she doesn't want to do that
anymore.
She's
bored by the whole process.
She is. So she says it's not possible. And then we see her sitting in her office playing with the top of the blue Sapphire. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, I think it's Anhio Zafiro.
Zafiro.
It's a Z, right? Anhio Zafiro.
Zafiro. I think you say that the other way. Zafiro.
Anhio.
Yeah, we're... I don't think we're saying that right. But anyway, and she's thinking. So then we see Mike, and he's showing Gus the super lab and telling them what all happened in there and about the pillar being knocked over, what it's going to take to fix it and the extra time. And this is where Mike tells them that at best they're at the halfway point and they're way behind schedule, but the building's sound. Gus asks about Ziegler, and Mike tells him that he told him how serious it was and he has eyes on him and he thinks everything's okay. And Gus kind of drops it and lets it go. And then we go to Jimmy, and I think he's in his office. I actually wrote that down, in his office, but I don't think that's where he was, because when we go out, that's not Jimmy's office. But there's a hole in the wall. There's water dripping.
It's the office he's thinking of renting, right? He's like,
it is, but I thought it
hunting.
Yes, but I thought it was his actual Breaking Bad office, since it was in that strip mall like that. But it wasn't from the outside. But Kim shows up. She knocks on the door. And she saw his car there, she said. Of course, he told her where he was going. And Jimmy is, I don't know, he's like, he's scared to go to the door because he's afraid of what she's there to say to him, I think. And she tells him she was just driving around thinking about things, and he just goes into it. He goes, look, what I asked you to do was nuts. I dumped that in your lap. I know it could have wrecked your career. It could have wrecked my being reinstated. And he's like, and I agree, we are done with all that.
Yeah, he details all the crimes that they've committed to. He misreads it, too. Like, he thinks, oh, shit, we shouldn't have done this. And I know that you don't like doing this kind of stuff, Kim, so I'm really sorry.
Just like we did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Kim sits there for a minute, and she gets this spark in her eye, and she says, let's do it again.
Kim reminds me of the woman... In this scene, she reminds me of the woman in Psycho, who is a really nice, sweet, plain Jane. She's pretty, but she's kind of straight and narrow, straight woman that turns crooked when she takes the money. She's supposed to take the money to the bank and deposit it, and spoiler alert, she doesn't. She ends up being a victim in Psycho. Kim looks just like her. I think it's Vera Miles, maybe? Vera Miles? It's an old movie, Psycho, from the 50s, I think, or 60s, so it's a long time ago. But she looks just like this woman who's like on the brink of turning from being a straight and narrow lawyer to somebody who's going to dip into this underworld.
So what do you think about her when you see her do this, when you see that spark in her eye? What did you think?
It's certainly interesting for the show. I mean, if you think about Kim Wexler, what the hell are you doing? It's kind of a shock if you're just thinking like, Kim Wexler, you're not supposed to do that. That it seems wrong, but I think for the show, it's super interesting because it totally conditions, what I'm going to try to guess at what happens to Kim.
Well, yeah, sure. But also, it's really wrong how they do this, because they make you... I mean, I was so happy, right, that she didn't break up with Jimmy. I was so happy that she didn't just come down there to break up with him because of the way he feels about her. So even though it means that she is doing something wrong and wants to do more wrong, I couldn't help but feel relieved.
Well,
and
don't be too happy, Michelle, because this just means that their separation isn't going to be due to Kim breaking up with Jimmy. Their separation is going to probably be due to something worse.
Mike, I'm not going to take your negativity all the time. All right, so, well. Okay. All right. Then we
By
see
the way,
Nacho.
I just Googled this because I don't want another whole week of like getting ripped. It's Zafiro Añejo. Añejo.
Añejo.
Zafiro
Añejo
with the Añe over the N.
Right. Right. I knew we were
and
saying
they may
it right.
Even
Zafiro Añejo.
Zafiro. Zafiro. Z-A-F-I-R-O. Zafiro Añejo.
Añejo. Mm-hmm. And it's not a real tequila.
All right.
You know that.
It's huh? cucumber water, right?
No, it's not. It's a made-up tequila for the show. And I looked it up, and there is a... I mean, I found it. I obviously wasn't searching for it, but there is a company or a person or somebody who will make you the cap to that, that intricate design cap. For that bottle, for the low, low price of like $1,700 or
something.
Who
cares about that? I want the tequila, not the cap.
Well, there is no tequila.
Oh, there's tequila, Michelle.
Well, okay. Nacho goes into the cafe and he looks at Domingo, and now the cook is sitting beside Domingo, and they're both staring at Nacho like with deer in the headlight look.
Eduardo.
That's right. Eduardo's in the kitchen. He's trying to get Nacho to taste some food. Nacho doesn't even know who he is, but he says he's a Salamanca, and he's there just to help out. He's good with numbers, and that's it.
Yeah, that's all Nacho needs is another Salamanca in his lap.
Like, he didn't have it bad enough.
And he's a happy, he's one of those gleeful Salamancas, too. Not a
the
cousin.
Yeah.
He's a happy murderer. Happy, joyful murderer.
The kind that you can't tell is even mad at you.
So Seppenwald reminds everybody what happens in the desert with Jesse and Walt and Saul when they first meet him. And he says, Saul tells his fake kidnappers, who are Jesse and Walt, that Ignacio is to blame for whatever they're mad about. Like, don't, it's not me, it was Ignacio. And then because he thinks they're working for Lalo. You must work for Lalo. And that's this guy, Eduardo.
Right.
So
right.
Whoever this guy is, he's some big hot player in the cartel that is soon to be feared, I'm sure.
Yeah. And my heart kind of sank for Nacho with him showing up.
Yeah, but so Nacho and Kim, two big mysteries.
They are. And we've only got two more episodes. The next episode, the next to last episode of season four, is that off Wiedersehen.
What? How do you say it, Michelle?
Wiedersehen.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's how you say it, off Wiedersehen, which means goodbye until we can meet one another again. And the preview for next week says Jimmy and Kim unburden themselves. I don't know what that means. Risking their relationship in the process. Nacho is forced to make the rounds with Lalo. And Mike has cause to worry.
Lalo, right?
Lalo. Is it Lalo or
Lalo?
I think
so.
Okay. Not a lot of upcoming shots, as many as they normally give us, but TV does that a lot of times as the season's nearing the end. Did you watch the upcoming little clips?
I saw it just at the very end, but I was trying to get ready for this. So what did you see?
Okay, Jimmy's spiffing up his shoes. He's in a jacket and tie with a briefcase, getting ready, it looks like, to walk into court. We know he's getting reinstated next week, so this should be next week. Jimmy and Kim are sitting in a cafe, and Jimmy's telling her that this time next week, he'll once again be James McGill Esquire. Nacho and Lalo. What, Lalo? Lalo.
La, la, la. Remember it that way. La, la, la.
Okay. Nacho and Lalo are getting in the car, and then we see them visiting Hector. You hear Mike saying the words, "finish the job," as a grate is being opened, and then a switch is being toggled on. But it's not like the grate, I don't think, to the super lab, because there's like, you're looking at it from inside, and you're looking up in their sky above, so I don't know where he's at. Kim is standing outside a building, and we hear Jimmy saying, "that's the best thing I've ever done," and then looking through the hole, like the hole that the water was dripping in. Some guy, I think it might have been Tyrus, says he's in position, and Mike tells him to go, and then there's a car squealing. And Gus is asking someone if there's anything else he can do for them. And it looks like he might be in his Los Pollos Hermanos outfit when he's saying that. So I don't know. Two more weeks.
So until we meet again is 4-9, and then winter is 4-10. So that's kind of an interesting little hint of a pathway.
It is.
Boy, I hope Huel doesn't ruin his second chance, Michelle.
Well, he doesn't.
Well, we know he's doing criminal stuff with Bill Burr. How do you feel about that, Huel? Reasonably.
What? I don't know what you're talking about. What are you talking about?
No, when they bring the FedEx thing to Ted to make him sign it. You feel good now about that, Huel? Reasonably.
But we know he's around. We know he's around for a while. Mike.
He's still sitting in that room that Hank left him in, I think.
Be nice.
All right, Michelle, well, that's it for Kushada with all of our pronunciations and mispronunciations.
Well, good grief. I mean, you have to know how to pronounce.
Maybe you can. Maybe my word Nazi friend can help me. Can you say mispronunciation and be okay?
I mean, I doubt it. We say a lot of things.
Mispronunciation. You can't commentate on something. You comment. And she's like, oh, no, you can say commentate. She went to Harvard. She's pretty smart.
Okay. Too I mean, I believe her. You know, there's just like, you know, I mean, like, I completely, look, I'll take any criticism on speech because I understand. But in this show, you literally have to know how to speak Cajun and, you know, Texan and German and Spanish. I mean, there's a lot, right? And that's just so far. So, it's pretty different.
Right. Well, I got to learn how to speak Tennessee.
Yeah, like pronunciation.
Watch that be a real word, and watch Zafiro Anejo be wrong, and all this other stuff that I'm so sure I'm right about be just totally wrong. No. And watch Lalo really be Lalo.
No, you're right. It better not be, because now I've got Lalo in my mind. But I'm reasonably sure you're right about
this. How is Lalo the short of Eduardo? I just Googled it, and it's the short for Eduardo.
It is, yes. I heard the same thing. I don't know.
Mike and Michael, you can see that connection. But Lalo and Eduardo?
Yeah. Well,
it's like Jack being short for John.
Well, and isn't... I don't know. There was another one. Was it Nacho's name?
Ignacio. I don't know. That makes sense.
I guess.
Nacho and Ignacio, that's alliterative.
Yeah, a little. A little.
All right, Michelle, auf Wiedersehen.
Gesundheit. Yeah.
That's all we got. 408's over. 409 next week. And who knows what time of week we'll do it.
Well, we'll do the best we can.
Who knows what time of week this will even get posted, because I still have the time crunch problem, but somehow, some way it will.
Well, you're doing a bang-up job, Mike, and I appreciate it.
Thanks, boss.
No problem.
My pay.
Okay.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.